Thank you for joining us for Live Paranormal Radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our Live Paranormal Radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Haunted Playground right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm a 26-year talk radio host. In a couple of weeks, I'll be able to say I'm a 27-year talk radio host. This is Haunted Playground. We're at hauntedplayground.com. I'm at sheenametalspiritual.com and the show, of course, and the network at liveparanormal.com. We are syndicated all over the world, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iTunes, Podomatic, Podbean, Blog Talk Radio. The list goes on and on. Welcome to our worldwide audience. So honored to be here and be part of the Live Paranormal Radio Network family. Every week on Haunted Playground, we talk about things outside of the three dimensions. We gather the brightest and the most beautiful minds in the spiritual and paranormal community and talk about everything from my third eye is opening to there's a griffin in my backyard. If it's psychic, spiritual, spooky, scary, it belongs here on the Haunted Playground. And my guest today is psychic and spiritual and spooky and scary and all of those things. He's a wonderfully talented psychic medium. He's also a teacher, a comic, an actor, writer, director, producer, wonderfully talented 360 artist and spiritual person. And I had the honor of having him last week at my spiritual service, Saturday Night Spiritual, which I do every month at the Founders Metropolitan Community Church in Hollywood. Please welcome the wonderful Paul Jacek. How are you, my friend? It's wonderful to have you here. A couple of things about Paul that I love. He is so talented and so gifted at what he does, yet he doesn't take himself so seriously. And I love that because sometimes when you have these real paranormal expert types here, they are taking themselves very seriously and you can't have fun. And Paul and I always have fun. Another thing that I love about Paul is that he is sort of equal parts spiritual and paranormal. He is a very, very gifted psychic medium, but he is also someone who knows the paranormal world very well, has worked in many haunted locations, and is also very well versed in all things paranormal, which I also love because sometimes, as we all know in these communities, the spiritual folks are not paranormal, and the paranormal folks are not spiritual, and neither of those things is a good thing. Another thing that I love about Paul is just that he just knows a lot about everything, and he's a wonderful expert to have around. And this is a strange day of technical difficulty, so I'm trying to get him on the air with me right now, and he's probably sitting on hold wondering what's going on. About 15 minutes ago, we did a show that was this show, but it got cut off at 15 minutes. So now it's no longer this show. And now I'm trying to get Paul up so we can do this actual show. Welcome, my friend. How are you? It's wonderful to have you here. How are you? What's on your mind? What's new?
I'm doing well. And what a marvelous introduction, Sheena. Thank you so much.
Oh, you bet. I love you to death. Everything I said was true. And I'm honored to have you as part of my spiritual and paranormal life.
Well, for me, they run so close.
Yes, I agree. To me, they're two sides of the same coin. I don't know why you would have a problem being part of both communities, but, you know, it's been a battle for a while with both communities, right?
Well, what I find interesting is I've had the great good fortune of visiting the Magic Castle frequently, and I think it's interesting, but you know, magicians and psychics don't get along, and I find that odd. Both of them think the other one is a fake, and I'm like, kids, in one respect, from a deep spiritual place, it's all entertainment.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So Yeah. So
yeah, I had some angry psychics say to me once, well, don't you think it's a little weird that you were an actor and a radio host and now suddenly you're a psychic? To which one I always say, it's not suddenly, sweetheart. I was always a psychic. It's just that now, kind of like that that tour that Madonna did, now I wear my underwear outside my clothes. But I always was a psychic, and that part ran my creative self and my actor self and my radio self. But after my mom died, I kind of got the what for from her in spirit to start doing this full time and sort of switch what was forward and what was back. And I'm so thankful for all the years that I have been an entertainer, because it helps me to, like you said, it helps me to get the messages across to people in a way that's easily understood. And that's very important.
Exactly.
You know,
once again, they are not dissimilar. You can ask any stand-up comic who walks to a stage. They can tell you what the energy is in the room. They can tell you where the blank spots are in the room. And they're not doing it by feeling it. They're doing it psychically. But when you bring that to their attention, they're going, oh, now, no, you don't believe any of that crap. Well, then your timing is off, and comedy is nothing but timing. So really,
exactly.
Artistry is a direct connection to the infinite energy that is everything. But I think it scares people. You know, I think the idea of being unlimited and these marvelous creatures, especially since they've been easing some of the restrictions. I was finding many of my clients were much like rhesus monkeys huddled up in the back of the cage that somebody suddenly opened the cage. They're a little afraid to step out. They just don't know. And that's why, at least I'm finding in my work, we were talking in the previous, people are hungry for the sacred. They want to grab a hold of something that they can believe in. Well, in a very high reason, believe in yourself. But if you're not safe with yourself, where do you run? As Br'er Rabbit said, you can't run from trouble. There's just no place that far.
And I think that was a problem during COVID. People were stuck in their own heads. And sometimes people don't feel comfortable with themselves. People would say to me, my house is haunted. I never noticed. Well, yeah, because you were never in your house. Now you're home all the time in your house, and you're realizing how haunted it is.
I had one of my clients call, and she said, this is terrible. She said, I'm in the bathroom because I think I have time by myself. But she said, you know what? I don't like my husband and I don't like my children.
Yeah.
And I said, well, that's pretty normal for what we're going through. She goes, no, but really. She said, we've all been so busy, been really just sharing an address. But now that we're stuck here, she goes, this is awful. And I said, well, join what many people have done, because usually – what we've had to do is, you know, we met somebody, it seemed nice, you're good, I'm good, you know, don't bring up my bad stuff, I won't bring up your stuff. Oh, look, we have children. Okay, then we grow old, and then we get to do it again. But the pandemic was the big reset button of, oh, really? Now we're stuck here, so now I have to talk to you? Yeah, and these children have no manners, and they're horrific. Well, no one's been around them. Everybody's been either in their phone or rushing off to do something else. It was really a marvelous experiment in seeing, you know, what you're made out of.
Absolutely, and finding out if your house is haunted. I want to talk about some paranormal stuff today, because you and I talked so much spiritual last time, and I feel like I always overlook the paranormal with you. We were having a fantastic discussion I'd like to have again. Before we lost our feed, about the difference in a ghost, a spirit, and a soul. So will you sort of lay out for me the difference in those things for you, and then I will chime in.
Okay. So let's start at the top. So a soul. Many people will look at me with a sly eye and go, you know, I know I'm an old soul. And I always grin going, what I know is all souls are the same age.
Oh, okay. All right.
But not every soul comes to play at Earth. This is hard here.
Right.
University Earth is difficult. You have to worry about laundry and rent and insurance. I mean, there's a lot to distract you. So all souls are the same age. Now, so the difference we talked about between ghosts and spirits. Ghosts generally, thumbnail sketch, don't know they're dead. So they need to be much more pitied than censored. So, but spirits are they have crossed over, and usually when they come back for a visitation is usually to reassure you, yes, I'm fine, and I love you. Now, the spirit is probably a sliver of the larger soul that came back. So that's how I explain it.
So do you believe that mediums can contact spirits after the soul has moved to another body? Because sometimes spirits are tapping into, like, grandma from 50 years later, and I'm thinking, but grandma is moving on.
That I'm a little unclear on, because another thumbnail sort of sketch is that there's 100 years between each lifetime. It is very, but if something was interrupted, it is a little odd to think that the universe plays crap with our lives, sometimes a soul will return. And what I'm finding and I'm fascinated with is sometimes people will return within their own families.
Yes. Yes. Oh, often. That happens all the time. And I mean, in my personal cosmology, not 100 years, because sometimes souls come right back, especially children and babies that die very, very young tend to recycle right back in, you know? I think it just depends on what spirit says and what the soul says, right? I mean, what if you want to come back, and then if you're allowed to come back? I think that spirit decides whether or not you're ready or you need more time at home. I mean, I believe that everybody at home has sort of a job that they do at home that helps the universe run. So you're working whether you're here or there. It just depends on where you're more needed at the time.
I agree. So within that, so I also believe if you crossed over in, let's say, not so pleasant circumstances, you're immediately taken to, like, into intense, loving, caring therapy on the other side.
Yes.
For however long that takes. So, you know, think of women that were burned at the stake during the Salem witch trials. They may still be undergoing some loving therapy. Victims of the death camps in Germany. Because that abrupt and hideous and horrible example of man's inhumanity to man needs to be evened out, because it's hard to imagine that we really are all connected and loving, but watch what people do to each other. People will frequently say to me, doesn't it scare you? I always say, the living scare me far more than the dead do.
Oh, God, absolutely. Me too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, also people who commit suicide need that time, right? There needs to be that I call it celestial traffic school. It's kind of like it's an evaluation period followed by a gentle and loving retraining period for folks who are either, like you said, too traumatized to come back or have just maybe not, for whatever reason, learned their lessons, whether they decided to come home early or they maybe weren't the best people. I mean, not horribly hideous people, because I'm probably crazy, but I believe horribly hideous people come from a different place and go to a different place. I know that doesn't make me very popular in the spiritual world, but that's
Here's what I think is interesting. Before you come, University Earth, this is what I tend to, and I've found a little evidence along the way, is that you sit down with a team and go, okay, I'm going to go. And they're like, okay, what would you like to do? Well, there's some things I'd like to work on. So you literally do write out a contract of what you'd like. And and maybe you just want to have the experience of just being a small child till the age of 4. Maybe that's all that you're working on. So in my imagination, I see a lovely room full of, like, Jewish boobies going, oh, she only wants to stay till she's 4. Well, let's find some people. So they're, like, going through massive – I'm sure they have computers now, Steve Jobs over there. But they're trying to find the exact good match for all of that. But the two things that are never written in a contract are murder or suicide.
Mm.
They happen. But I also, within that same room full of sweet lady people and people helping, all of a sudden one of those instances happen. And they're like, wow, that Because think of how many people you run into just in a day, and all of a sudden, like, It's a Wonderful Life, you're missing. Well, there were other things that were going to go on in that contract, and now you may have messed up several other people's contract. Suicide passes in anger, in vicious, horrible, like, I heard a story of a man who was just, he was just horrible, and he was horrible to his stepdaughter, and he was being awful to his wife, and the wife and daughter had gone shopping, so he laid down on her side of the bed and blew his head off with a shotgun. So it made sure that when she came home, she found the horror, so his horror continued, and then he didn't move on. He blew himself out of his body, but he stayed in the apartment. And they had to get a group of basically rescue mediums to, in fact, the bio dad of the little girl, the woman had remarried because her husband had passed, came to help him cross over. Like, you know what, but that's enough.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
And then he's being handled, you know, on the other side. And not in retribution, but along with that. In some instances, because somebody said at a funeral I attended, isn't it a shame he's not going to heaven? And she was too far away for me to, like, thump her, because everyone goes home. It's hard to imagine that Hitler went to heaven. But here's the deal. When you do cross over, and we will relive this moment, Sheena, you and I, in our life review, but you also get to see how you impacted everybody else. Don't think that 6 million people's agony is easy to handle. He may not have finished his life review of all of the agony and the resurging issues of his actions. So he may have gone to heaven, but it may not be a cosmic
freedom. Are we sure that Hitler went to heaven? No, I don't know that I believe in hell. I believe in obstacles and lessons in every life. I don't know that I believe in hell, but I also don't know that I believe that – now, here's where I'm going to lose everybody, probably including you. I don't know that I believe that folks that are extremely dark, that choose extreme darkness, go to the same place. Perhaps they go to a different neighborhood where they're happier. You know what I mean?
I don't think we're dissimilar. What I think is because that contract has been broken around suicide, or if you've been evil, you do an immediate, like, boomerang. It's called going through the left door. Instead of going through the tunnel to a beautiful meadow or, you know, and seeing all of your beloveds who've passed running towards you, you just basically do a big U-turn, and you get to come back to University Earth without the benefit of connection to the other side.
Okay.
And that's a certain sort of
hell. So you
kind of
wander like a pariah.
Exactly. Now you're back here, and without the benefit of a loving, caring situation, because that was your choice. Okay. Sometimes people will ask me, well, how allow this? And I said, you know, I have this vision of God, like a lovely gentleman reading the newspaper, and you can hear his children outside playing. But they seem to be being really mean to each other. He wonders why they're doing that since they've made up the game, but he'll sit there until it gets really bad before he steps in.
Yeah.
It's a different way of
it's,
thinking of it.
It's I mean, I definitely think spirit steps in. And I do think that we are, it's a partnership with spirit. We're in collaboration with spirit for what's going to be our next life. And we do sometimes choose to come here and run into people from our soul tribe. Sometimes spirit also just arranges that. I do think there are a lot of things, though, that are out of our control, because I think if you planned your own school curriculum, maybe you wouldn't challenge yourself as much as you need to be challenged, you know?
Well, or what was explained to me is, you know, let's say you and I are sitting down and we're discussing you returning to Earth, and you've written this amazing contract of time. You're living in a place where you love everything you do and you do everything you love, and everything is possible. So you've written this amazing contract. And so then you choose your spirit guide, who will be with you from your first breath and will meet you at your last breath. We've got all that in place. So then we take it to the council. The council are 12 wise people, I think of them sort of like the senators from Rome, and they're looking over your contract. They kind of have to give their okay before you go, and they're going, hey, Sheena, here we have you in a car accident at 4, and you're pretty badly banged up. But then again, you're an unwed mother at 15, but then you develop a terrible disease. That's a lot in one lifetime. Can we move some of this around? Because we tend to really write amazing, because University Earth, because you have a body, this is like a huge college course in living. This is where the rubber meets the road. This is where it's not just a I want to feel love. This is a proving ground. So that's why we come back more than once, because there are things that we do want to learn. So the council's there to go, you know what, that whole, you know, having an arm ripped off when you're, you know, 6 and then having it reattached and become a bionic woman, we like all of that. But then let's move out of you having rickets, and because people write, I look at some people's lives and go, yeah, that contract must have been amazing if this is what we're doing here.
Right. Well, you have to have a little bit of everything, right? It's like checking things off your box to graduate. It's like to graduate from college, right? You have to take the psych class, the anthropology class. Maybe you have to check the rickets box, the leprosy box. You have to have everything, you know, the rape box, the abandonment box, in order to experience everything. And it's just at different times, right? Because it, you know, I have clients that say to me, like, well, my life is so hard and everybody else's life is so easy. And I always say, no, that's not true, actually. Everybody's life is sort of an equal amount of hard. It just depends in which way it's hard. You know,
exactly.
For people who have very hard things, other things are easy. I have had in my life a lot of physical challenges. I have not had a lot of mental health challenges. Some people have different than that, you know. Everybody has something that's in their life, things that are painful, gifts, strengths and obstacles, right?
Well, exactly. And, you know, with the council and or your own spirit guide going, oh, you know what? Last time, remember you murdered those people during the Inquisition? You've got a few of those things you have to check off. So if you were the murderer then, you are the murderee now. Because you can always get both sides of every story.
Okay. Yeah, I know a lot of people think that, right? That if you have to try it and then you have to also be it. I think that's a way that is to understand reconciling with one's darkness.
Yeah. Because contrast is how we learn.
Sure. Yeah. You got this all figured out, my friend. You've thought about this a lot. I'm just letting you talk. So
well,
let's talk about
going to go.
I was just gonna say, let's talk about why do you think the most ghosts are trapped? And
well,
do you think most ghosts that are trapped are actually intelligent haunting? Or do you think most of them are residual?
I will tell you, the two that I think are intelligent are the ones that are at the Comedy Store. Because they were hitmen for the mafia, basically. And they're still there. They're still on duty. They're still watching what's going on. You know, they are intelligent in the fact that they can also respond when asked, but they still think they're on duty. So, and I've asked a couple of people, I'm not quite sure how they crossed over. I think in that instance that whatever it was, they either got jumped, because I do believe they don't know they're dead. I do believe that they are confused. They think they're still on duty. They're watching to see, you know, if short Joey is going to come in. And but like some of the residual aboard the Queen Mary, it's just an imprint. It's almost like a slide projector, like the woman on ADEC who's trying to get to the doctor's office. She for sure doesn't know she's dead, and she doesn't know anything past the searing pain that's in her chest, and she's holding onto the hand railing. Now, here in the year 20, well, when I was there, it was 1984. The hotel guests that are seeing this poor woman holding onto the hand railing and clutching at her chest and bent over, they go to help her, and she fades. She's trying to get to the doctor's office, and that's where time stops for her. So she just repeats that over and over and over. I don't know that she knows that she can go on, because I think the pain was so intense and it scared her, so she's caught there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's so funny, we talked about that, and I never knew that story. And the last time you were here a few weeks ago, you told the story of that. And I told the story of when I fell asleep in the bar on A deck, which is actually was the doctor's office.
The doctor's
and woke
office.
Up and felt like I was having a heart attack and had to get off the ship. And who knew? Perhaps that lady jumps inside of you if you're a big open empath vessel that is much younger than you are now and has not yet learned to put up filters and screens to prevent such things from happening.
There is that. It's like walking. I tell people all the time when they go, well, how does that happen? I said, well, it's like having all of your doors and windows open at home. If you're walking around with all your doors and windows open, anything, walk into any dark bar, you'll feel the difference.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I didn't really know that that was a thing at the time. But I'll tell you, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but when my mom died, about 45 minutes after she died, so I'd had enough time to sign the paperwork for her body, drive from Newport Beach to Huntington Beach, so 15 minutes, get out of my car to go pick up my laundry, which is a weird thing to do when your mother's just died. But I also had this intense urge to get all of her favorite, them in a box and take them home. I don't know why, but I didn't want them in the house without her. I stumbled into her on the driveway. The driveway's on a slant, and I went back as she was moving forward, and she moved right through me.
Ooh.
And I don't know that I'd ever, maybe that's what happened to me on the Queen Mary that night, but to have a spirit move through you is the most interesting thing. And then we both sort of, I always liken it to when you're waiting in line and you kind of lean back and the person behind you kind of leans forward and you bump into each other and then you both scare each other. And move. We kind of scared the shit out of each other and then we both jumped in the opposite direction. That's an intense feeling to have a spirit move through you like that.
Yes.
And
my brother ran
so who's
through
to
me
say
as
that's
he left.
Not what that lady does. Oh, you had the same thing happen when your brother passed.
Yep. I was standing at the foot of his bed. His wife was standing to his right side and his son and daughter. And I could, we knew it was imminent. His breathing was shallow. And I said under my breath, go now, because he'd had a stroke at 47 and then was run over on his motorcycle. His body was pretty badly battered. He's 11 years older than I am. And so when I realized at the time, if you ever have the opportunity to be with somebody, this sounds so strange. He was my fourth person that I've been with. There becomes a time that's timeless. And I saw his chest settle. And he was a track and field star when he was in high school. Now, remember, he's 11 years older than I am, so I was very small. It felt like him running past me.
Yeah.
But I felt the chill as he, and I kept going, keep going, run, get out of that body. And he was in heaven in a second. And I couldn't have been happier because that little body was in bad shape. And since then.
Yeah, I was glad when my mom passed the same way.
Yeah. I mean, my grieving happened later, and I miss him terribly. But he's usually in my car with me as I'm on the 405, more than any other person in my family. My brother watches out for me.
Yeah, sure. Isn't that weird how people visit you in strange places and at weird times? And I don't know. I think it's really beautiful. But, yeah, I wouldn't recommend having to watch someone die because it's a lot.
No.
But it changes your life forever, and it certainly. I was there when my mother passed, and I literally saw her soul shoot out of her body, and I thought that was like something people just imagined. I thought, well, I'm not going to actually see anything. It's kind of I could feel it sort of starting in her solar plexus, and then it just kind of shot right out her right foot, and boom. And then looking at her body afterwards, it didn't really mean anything to me. It's weird how after the soul leaves, the body doesn't have a lot of significance to you anymore.
Well, and what was strange is I thought I can use the word it resembles my brother, but that thing isn't my brother.
Sure.
Yeah, it resembles him, but it's not. That's not it. So when we talk about that's why when we're dealing with ghosts, sometimes First of all, here's the deal, and I've been saying it a lot recently. If people or ghosts or whatever have a message and I can be helpful, I'm kind of in for that, but don't scare me. I don't need skeletons jumping out of a closet or, you know, a dripping head falling out of my kitchen mug cabinet. I just don't. But and since this moon, we're coming up to a pretty full moon, and the full moon, the veil is thinnest. Do you know that the velocity of the sun has picked up speed? That's why time seems to be moving faster.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and they're shameless on the other side when they have a message to get through. So.
Oh, yeah. No, time has just felt like it was moving, like, just insanely fast. This is a very interesting time. Because the time at home, right, when you're in a heaven, home, whatever you want, I call it home, it moves very different than we move now. So we're getting a little taste of that on the earth, and I think that's very interesting.
Well, and I've been telling my clients, and for all within the sound of my voice, think about what you're thinking about. Never has there been a time when it's been so important to not be sloppy in your thinking. Because if you're not careful, it'll be quite a surprise.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You have worked at two of the most haunted places in the world.
Yes, I have.
Right?
Well, three. Yeah. The Queen Mary, the Comedy
Store,
and the Stanley Hotel.
And the Stanley Hotel. Yeah. I forgot about Comedy Store. Yeah, I didn't like Comedy Store. I started there. I did a couple of shows in the Belly Room, and I was like, And then I moved to the Laugh Factory, and the Laugh Factory is also hideously haunted, but not in as a malevolent way. But you don't want to spend a lot of time on the second and third levels of the Laugh Factory.
They're in Hollywood, correct?
Yes, the Laugh Factory in Hollywood. Yes.
Yeah. And I will tell you, the Comedy Store is my home store, and then I was the receptionist during the day. Now, it's fun and very chic and all of that when I was there during the evening, but the real creep factor is during the day in the bright sunlight, because it's bright outside, but the Comedy Store is black on black on black on black. The only relief of that color are the red candles on the tables. So it's much easier to see the orbs dancing around during the day. You're okay, I see that. Okay, I see that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, and the Laugh Factory in Hollywood is different because the ground level is relatively okay. But if you go up into the balcony level, and behind the balcony, there's sort of this lounge area where they have private parties and where the comics sit and talk to themselves and pace around in the dark. And there's an energy there. And then once or twice I went up to the offices on the third level. You couldn't get me to work there. That was really oppressive. I don't know. Why do you think it is, being a lifelong comic and having much more comic experience than I do, why do you think that comedy clubs are so haunted?
Well, comics by their very nature are not mentally the epitome of mental health. That's what makes them funny. You know, and I count quite a few comics as dear friends of mine, but you know, we're a little left of center. So much so that when you get a lot of recognition for, lack of a better word, for being mentally ill on stage, that can take you to dark places. But with the passion that people carry that information, there's a lot of inference. I felt the same way on the second floor of the Improv on Melrose. It's a little creepy upstairs there. So I don't know if spirits float, but I will say that there's a place in Denver that I performed at.
But don't you think it's the second level because that's the less human trafficked area?
Maybe.
Because I think sometimes the more human beings go through an area, the more the spirits tend to pull back. The areas in these clubs where the people aren't as much, the basement of the Comedy Store, the you know, the upstairs at the Laugh Factory, the upstairs at the Improv, these are places where people aren't all the time. Those are the areas that tend to be more haunted, I think.
Well, the Comedy Works in Denver is actually a basement club, so you have to go down into the club, and the area behind is hewn out of sheer rock. So it's like having a giant boulder in the green room. one whole wall is just the sheer rock.
Right.
And it's so creepy down there. And what I was picking up down there were miners. And I thought, I have to figure out what this building was, because this isn't comics. These are people that are using picks and axes, and there could have been a cave-in. I never liked being in the green room of the comedy works. I'm like, oh, it's just so crazy. And cold in the middle of a hot summer, being downstairs next to that massive, you know, rock. It was always, that was their natural air conditioning.
Good either. Yeah, it's comedy stores are, but I think theaters as well, right, are super haunted. Hotels, other areas people go through and have a lot of experiences. Hey, have you ever been in the Hollywood Tower?
A long time. I've only been in there once, and just inside, my sense was you could sense the history in that room for sure.
Oh,
I didn't
God.
Delineate a whole lot in there.
I had a friend that lived there. And she would have us over at night, and we'd do little seances. I'd lead seances, and, you know, everybody else would do absinthe and pot brownies. I sound so old saying pot brownies, don't I? But I couldn't think of a better edibles, I guess. But she made them herself with her own hemp oil that she extracted, so it wasn't like any – there were no stores with green crosses then. And I always thought, yeah, this is creepy. This is a creepy place. I wouldn't want to live here. So one night, she asked me if I would feed her cats while she was out of town. And I was, you know, in my 20s and 30s working as a music promoter, so I was working until late and working at a club in North Hollywood, and I popped down to Hollywood afterwards at about 12:30 to feed her cats. And I walked in, and, you know, the tower at the time, now it's all fancy and expanded, and there's all these other buildings, but she lived in the old tower. That was the only one at the time. They used to play this pipe into the lobby, this 1920s music, that sounded like the song at the end of The Shining, you know? And there's nowhere to park, right? So I parked in the temporary spot you could park in for like 15 minutes just to run in and feed the cats, opened the door to the front door, walked into the lobby, and it was like, oh, and I sang on a summer night. And I'm like, oh, Christ. Oh. And I was just hit. It's like they were all up on the landings of the different floors looking down at me, and I'm like, oh, this is not good.
Ooh.
Luckily, she was on the first floor, and she was very close to the door. I literally ran in there, shut the door, fed the cats, pat on the head, and literally got the hell out of there. That was such a different place at night with no one there than it was during the day or at a party with a bunch of people there, in the same way that Hollywood, right? That Hollywood and Highland area. I did a play there in 2012, and somebody said, oh, just park over at the Highland Center. It's cheaper. I did a show at the Stella Adler Theater, which is above the Hollywood Wax Museum. And, oh, just park in the Hollywood Highland Center. It's the cheapest. Yes, you were. So I park at Hollywood Highland Center, and I'm all coming up the escalator and walking across the street. But this is like at 6 o'clock going to a rehearsal. So at 10 o'clock, I got to leave the rehearsal. And let me tell you something. At 10 o'clock, it's a different Hollywood. And you lived right by there.
I did.
You walk with the ghosts after 10 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
And that walk back to the Highland Center at like 11 o'clock at night to get into my car, that was one of the scariest walks of my life. And it wasn't being in the center. It was that walk down the sidewalk. And it wasn't a very long walk, just a little bit across the street and a little bit and you're in. But you can feel them all walking up and down the street. I don't know how you lived in that area for so long, because it's like living in a graveyard.
Well, and there's layers. Do you know, I remember I had a job in my – I don't think I had a car then. That's why I was taking the bus. I would have to catch the bus at 4:50 in the morning at the corner of Sycamore and Hollywood Boulevard, which is right across from the Chinese Theater. And for the most part, I'm a morning person. I don't mind the morning.
Okay.
But I'm walking along, and there is literally no one around. So I'm standing at the bus stop. There is no one around, and I'm thinking thoughts. And I see across the street a guy walking in the forecourt of the Chinese Theater. Now, they have little half walls that are, you know, polite walls of please don't walk here when we're not open. So I'm thinking, some jerk is standing over there. And the more I watched him, the more I realized I couldn't see the lower half of his body.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I went, okay, all right. So I throw a big ring of protection around me, and I asked for St. Michael's protection. And I thought, well, who would know? It couldn't have been a ghost. It was probably, you know, early morning, blah, 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 blah. What, I love that when you ask a question, you will get an answer. Later on, there is, I guess, a haunting in the forecourt of an actor who that's all he does is just walk around and look at all of the hand and footprints because he never got a chance to do that.
Oh, wow.
He suicided there in the forecourt.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That doesn't surprise me. And I used to work right next door at the knitting factory when it was there. I don't know what's where the knitting factory was now, but it's over where there's like a Walgreens or a CVS or something there and a gym. And it was tucked back in there.
Well, that was a beautiful, beautiful apartment building. When I first moved to Hollywood in 1976, those were the Hollywood Garden Court apartments. Cecil B. DeMille even lived there at one time. There was a ballroom with, I believe, a built-in pipe organ. It was a gorgeous, and you know, the front looked like the White House. It was very stately looking. And they bulldozed all of that to build the Galaxy. Yep, sure.
Oh. That was before L.A. started really preserving its stuff a lot better, like in the late 80s, early 90s. And closer to 2000, L.A. started getting better.
The Pantages Theater has a lady on the mezzanine that you can hear her singing.
Oh, I bet. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can feel the energy there. Oh, what is the thing with the knitting factory? Yes, I felt it when I was coming up the parking lot every time from the parking lot. But what I noticed was interesting about the knitting factory wasn't so much that I felt ghosts as that after a certain time at night, I felt the switch in the homeless people. See, I have a theory that a lot of homeless psychically gifted, and that's why they're homeless. And they can't handle the input, so they just sort of wander the earth. And I noticed at night they would change. And I noticed that when I was doing that play at the Cella, too, that at night the homeless people are different. And I think it's because the spirit starts to sort of walk into them. You know,
there's a lot of walk-ins, you bet.
Another place I really noticed that was in the Tribeca district of Manhattan. When I went out there to do the vagina monologues, we went down to Tribeca one day to go to what is now the 9/11 memorial. At that point, they had bulldozed everything, and they were building the basement foundation for what's there now. Mm-hmm. And that was very heavy at the time to be there. Probably still is. I haven't been down there since because I don't have no urge to go down there. It was too much. But then at night we went to Delmonico's, which is kind of in the Wall Street district. And it's the oldest restaurant in the country, which I love. But during the day, it was one thing, happy, happy, happy hour, people in all the bars, little Wall Street people getting their drink on. But we leave the restaurant at 9, 10 o'clock at night, and you cannot get a cab that far down. Now you probably call Uber, but this was in, you know, the mid-2000s when there was no Uber. And trying to walk up far enough to where you can pick up a cab, I got to tell you, the homeless people that you would pass that time of night, their energy was completely different. It was like Escape from New York. And I believe it's because the spirits come out at night and they affect those folks, you know?
Well, especially if you are altered. Let's say you do have a drinking problem and you're fighting alcoholism, or maybe not even fighting, that's just how we're living our lives now. And that's like living with all the doors and windows open. So therefore, if there is a very crafty individual who happens to be at the moment non-physical and walks by basically an empty apartment, goes, I think I'll spend some time in there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's
why many times
that has
people
a lot
say,
to do.
In a blackout, I didn't know what I was doing. That wasn't me. Well,
right.
How many times has something that in the 3D world we would have said, oh, you know, alcoholic haze, could have been a bit of possession while he was drunk?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's intense. So what was the Stanley like for you? What is it like to work in a very haunted place? Not in an urban area. Does that make a difference?
Well, it did because The Stanley Hotel is beautiful, first of all. That sort of Edwardian elegance that it was built with, I find very comforting. Some people felt it felt fussy to them. But it's in such a beautiful location and built by the Stanley brothers, S-O and F-E Stanley, who built the Stanley Steamer Automobile. They'd made a ton of money because they sold their dry plate photographic process to George Eastman of Eastman Kodak. So the brothers, very smart, made a ton of money in the earlier part of the 20th century. But F.O. Stanley came down with tuberculosis. So they left, I think it was Ohio, and came west for his illness. And Colorado and Arizona had a lot of tuberculosis sanitariums and or health places because the air was clear and pure and dry, which seemed to be helpful. So they built this grand hotel, but it was a seasonal hotel because there was no heat in the hotel. So it would open on Memorial Day and close on Labor Day. And so there is the sense of history around it. It also had the first electric elevator west of the Mississippi.
Oh, wow.
In the Stanley Hotel. So, and it, you know, it played host to all of the hoi polloi. John Philip Sousa tuned the piano in the music room. Mrs. J.J. Brown, known as the unsinkable Molly Brown, frequented it. She would come up from Denver and had a suite on the second floor. And funny, it's part of room 217 where the horrible woman in the bathroom is in The Shining. So when Stephen King stayed there, he could sense all of that history. Now, the ghosts themselves, they're not the scary variety. They're more of the sort of sweet variety. Well, one of them being one of the instances I had, I was a houseman during the day. So I was in every room of the hotel at some time during the day, making beds, cleaning bathrooms, you know, bundling laundry. And then the housekeeping department was also in the basement, and it had a hand-carved tunnel through rock to the outside. And I never liked that tunnel. I would try to book it through there to the square of sunshine on either end. It was really uncomfortable down there. But I had to go pick up some chairs from the music room. The music room was dark, and it was across the lobby, and it had a big pocket door, beautiful pocket door. And as I began to open it, I could see someone standing next to the piano. And I thought, no one should be in here. And I tried to fumble for the light. And as I did, at the minute I hit the light, I could see it dissolve. And once again, I go, did I see that? Well, Flora, F.O.'s wife, used to play the piano, discern if it was it felt male. But F.O. and Flora seem to be tidying up around the hotel most often. F.O. likes to shake the mattress in the bridal suite, especially if it's the people's first night there. So the horror was attached to The Shining. And that's Stephen King's I didn't have anything. Well, the only remarkable moment is when all of the furniture was piled on the bed. That was unusual.
Right.
What that was a friend of mine.
I had that happen.
I
told you the last time. I'm sorry?
No. Well, we were changing. And what we would do is I would go in and strip the beds. He would clean the bathroom. Then we'd both make, because usually there were two beds in each room. And I don't know, we were bickering about something. And we just shut the door. And we heard this, like, loud bang and a clatter. And he goes, what did you do? Because I was the last one to shut the door. And I said, well, I don't know. So I used my key, and I opened it, and the chain's on the door. Now, that chain can only go on the door if someone's inside. And he goes, open the door. I said, the chain's on the door. He goes, that can't be. And so he comes. He can see the chain across the door, and I can't force the door open, but we can look through the door into the mirror that's over the chest of drawers and see all of the rest of the furniture piled in the middle of the bed.
Wow.
And we both left the maid's cart right there and ran downstairs and said, I can't. We're out of here. We have to go.
I'm freaked out.
Well,
I was worried about the bed because I think I told you last time you were here, but the night I spent on the Queen Mary, something took all the soles out of my shoes and laid them all on the bed.
I wonder what it is. Strange.
I think it's to get attention, right? To let you know, here's something that's wrong. See, I'm here. Because this wouldn't normally be happening. See, it's me.
Well, and
nothing
house,
you're going to
you know,
chalk off
house,
to a human thing.
The house mistress she kept accusing Bill Nye. She goes, how'd you do this? I said, I didn't do it. Because they had to have a maintenance man come and cut the chain to get into it. She goes, how did you do this and put the chain on? And both Bill and I were like, we didn't. Because she was having none of that ghost talk at all. Well, then you explain it to us.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if it upsets them that Stephen King brought that there. The ghost talk.
You know what I love about it? About all of that and reading it and knowing about it. Because he writes about Colorado a lot, my home state. You know, The Stand is also set in Boulder, Colorado. He was really impressed. Now, he also comes from Maine, so there's a real connection to, you know, the outdoor
Maine,
spirit.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And the natural flow of living that you don't really get a glimpse at in. I find it more here now that I'm down by the water. Do you, when you're down by the water?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, more spirits. But, well, the water's a conduit for spirits, right? So definitely more spirits when you're near the water. Yeah.
So
I wonder what the story was with Colorado and him. I didn't really think about that, but you're right. That's where the main hub of good was in my very favorite novel, The Stand.
Mm-hmm. And I so love that the devil lives in the MGM Grand in Las Vegas.
I know. Fantastic. Did you see the Paramount Plus series? It's amazing. It's really good.
I didn't get to see all of it. It's on my binge list.
It's wonderful. The only thing is, I think, how do you do The Stand in 10 episodes? You know, it should have been 5 seasons. But I understand they have to have some kind of resolution because people don't have a very good attention span, you know. Right, that's right. All the dark people go to – the dark-souled people go to Las Vegas, and mm-hmm. the light people go to the MGM Grand. It's hysterical.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. How haunted do you think Colorado is? Because obviously you grew up there, and I think we don't hear about haunted Colorado a lot outside of the Stanley.
Oh, but she does. She has a big haunted history. There was there's a beautiful park near downtown Denver called Cheeseman Park. And I had gone a couple of times with my my family. There's a beautiful sort of Greek gallery. It's got iconic columns. It's on a slight hill, so really standing in the middle of those columns, you get a beautiful view of downtown Denver and then the Rockies behind it. It's breathtaking.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember sitting there, and there were some kids throwing a frisbee, and this had to be 1966, maybe 67, because I was not yet 10, and I suddenly was so upset. Now, I got accused a lot as a kid of, oh, God, you're so overly sensitive. You're making things up. But I was
right.
So creeped out. I didn't want to stand on the ground. If I could have flown up and sat in a tree, and my mother said, what is wrong with you? It originally had been the city graveyard.
Oh, wow.
And when Denver expanded, they decided that they would make it into a park, and, you know, they moved the bodies, some of them. And I never knew that until way later. I went, no wonder I thought somebody was going to grab me. So
Cheeseman Park. Wow. Yeah, absolutely.
Is there the U.S. Capitol has a woman that walks on the second level. She was an intern that went missing, that no one's ever found her. There's a lot. The Brown Palace Hotel has a shooting that happened in their bar that people who are sensitive sometimes will hear the gunshot while they're having a cocktail in the captain's bar. There's a lot. Well, and then in Central City, which is it was a mining town and now it's a gambling center, the face on the barroom floor in the teller house, this guy was in love with a woman and he had a terrible drinking problem and he was really drunk, but he had some paints with him. He fell down and he painted her face on the floor in the bar and died on top of it. And the face on the barroom floor is still there. And and the Central City Opera House, they used to have to bring people early because it's at about 12,000 feet above sea level. So if opera singers came from New York, they would have to train for a day or two because of the thinness of the air. They simply couldn't sing at that altitude. They'd have to come like a month before the show opened to acclimate to the altitude. So Colorado is stuffed with lots and lots of ghosties and ghoulies.
That's wonderful. Was it hard to, as a young psychic, to adjust from the psychic energetic climate of Colorado to here? Did you come from Colorado to here?
I came from Colorado here. What was interesting is, and I think maybe the altitude had something to do with it, what I took for normal impressions, I would walk into somebody's home, especially if I were with my parents, and I could pretty much discern, you know, what was going on or the tenor of the house. I think everybody can. It was harder once I moved to Los Angeles, been enwrapped in cellophane, that I couldn't feel it. And then I had a teacher of mine say, it's the density of, it's the humidity. And I felt that way when I was in Atlanta. I could barely breathe because it was, the air was so moist. And that, and it also dulled, for me, it dulled my receptivity. In some instances, it can heighten it, but that way I felt like I was just always, somebody was squeezing me too tight. So it took a while to acclimate to this lower sea level with it. When I would fly, when I was a flight attendant, and be bouncing around, I would have to stop and ground, and I need to do it more now as I say this out loud, ground myself before I went on the aircraft and also coming off the aircraft, because it's a different atmosphere, literally, physically, and metaphysically.
Yes, absolutely.
So. So I do find that it's interesting. When I would go into the Hollywood Roosevelt, I never go into the Roosevelt that I don't cross myself first.
The Roosevelt's creepy. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it always makes me feel like I can't breathe. Yeah, it's a lot.
See,
I can't believe I'm saying this, but we're completely out of time again, my friend. Where can people find you online? And let's do this soon, because we got to talk about the Roosevelt, and I want to talk about haunted things you encountered in airplanes.
You can find me at pauljacek.com. I would love to read for anybody. You can find me at pauljacek.com or Paul Jacek Tarot Reader is my page at Facebook, and I'd love to read for anybody who's interested.
Fantastic. And if you missed those links, you can go to sheenametalspiritual.com, hauntedplayground.com, or liveparanormal.com to find out more about Paul. Thank you, my friend. I'm Sheena Metal. We're here every Wednesday at 6 o'clock Pacific time, and then at 9 o'clock, look for me on Live Paranormal's video channel at facebook.com/TheLiveParanormal for my companion show, Haunted Playground After Dark, where I do some free psychic readings for you. Of course, I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com for all of your spiritual needs, and also you can find me on social media everywhere at Sheena Metal. And I'm also here on Tuesdays at 5 o'clock Pacific time doing my Raising the Vibration show at RaisingTheVibrationRadio.com. Till I see you next week, stay spooky, be spiritual, seek peace, live in love. Lead with kindness, embrace unity, raise your vibration, and always believe in things that go bump in the night. I'll see you next time. I love you all.